along the coast.
Hi, my name is Max Goff. Welcome to my Zen and Java internet radio station. While I can hardly claim that this is a real radio station, with the utilization of the internet and free or really cheap audio production software, I'm able to share the spoken word with a theoretical global audience. In my mind, that's actually a lot more powerful than a real radio station. Please join me in an exploration of a set of beliefs that I call Zen and Java, beliefs and ideas that I've expressed as a speaker and writer for the past 5 years. Here I've taken clips from some of my presentations and grouped them into themes. Please feel free to send comments, criticisms, questions, whatever. My email link is easily found on my website. Thanks for listening, and welcome to Zen and Java.
If there is hope for humanity, it's in software.
That message has been the manifesto of my travels since I first delivered it to an audience of software developers in London in 1998. It summarizes a belief system, it implies an epistemology, it raises a challenge and recognizes an opportunity. And it's usually good for a laugh. One of the first concepts I like to introduce when I speak to software developers is a hole.
The first thing I was going to show you is a picture of a hole, a big old hole. You know, we have the Olympics this year, right, down in Sydney, and world records, man, we're setting world records. We got a world record this year, too, which probably isn't very funny, and that's that big hole over the South Pole. World record hole this year. And that's due to the unintended consequences of human technology. We get a big hole.
The hole in the ozone layer is a metaphor. It has interesting properties that bear examination, but as a metaphor serves to reference something a lot larger.
We're kind of aware on our planet, those of us who have the opportunity to get up and actually go to work every day, those of us who have the opportunity to communicate every day, those of us who are plugged in, we're aware of the changes taking place on our planet. We're aware that 70% of the coral reefs died in the last couple of years. They bleached. They lost their basic stuff, that marrow of that bone that allows all that biodiversity to take place. We're aware that rainforests are a function of, inverse function of beef consumption, which is perhaps itself a function of technology. We're aware of this stuff. Yet I'm standing before you here to say that if there's hope, though, if there is hope, it is in software. That we should spell software that way. And that's where the hope is. And that's the thought I want to share with you. That's the belief I want to share with you. That the work that we do in this business is the hope for humanity. Software is hope because from a consumption perspective, those who consume the most, the very top 20% and those who consume the least, the bottom 20%, are the ones that are almost entirely responsible for that big hole. So it's us that consume and those that do not have the means. Software helps us to ameliorate that. Software because we can give it away, because value can be created and then distributed cheaply and freely. And we're starting to see the manifestation of that phenomenon in our world. Software is how we fill that hole. Got the big hole, we'll fill it with software. By changing the processes involved.
We'll come back to the hole. It's too fine a symbol to just introduce and then not revisit at some opportune moment. But let's move on.
I went into a laundromat to do my laundry. All right, place downtown, little laundromat. And I'm sure you've seen him. The guy had, there by the folding table where you fold your laundry, he had currencies from all over our planet represented there. And the one that got my attention was this particular one, because I saw this symbol. You see that symbol there? Now, of course, I knew that that came from a different character set. I knew that. Of course I knew that. I'm a reasonable human being. But what struck me as funny is it looked like the $0 bill.
I've used the $0 bill as a symbol of internet software economics for several years now. And even while much of the early free madness has left the dot-com space in a tulip bulb stock market frenzy, the reality of free and open software is still having a profound impact on everything software touches, which these days is just about everything.
I thought that was so funny. Now, why would any rational entity on our planet go to the bother of printing up something like that? It's not even worth the piece of paper that it's printed on. And then it dawned on me. I went back to the hotel, dragged an evangelist back to the laundromat, had to see the thing. It dawned on me. It's not that it has zero value. No. No. That could have infinite value. Because that's good for the things that money can't buy. What's the most valuable piece of software to hit our planet in the last 10 years? Huh? If I were to ask you that, what one piece of software has literally changed everything? What would that be?
Browser.
The browser. Bingo. You get an alien doll. The browser. Yeah. Congratulations. How much does a browser cost? Free. Yeah. $10 bill. For good competitive reasons. Right? For good competitive reasons. It's free. Why is that so? Why is it true with software? Why do we give away this very valuable stuff? Why is that? Because we can. Because it doesn't cost anything to make that second copy. Once you get that first bunch of bits and you have a network in which the arbitrary cost of a transaction approaches zero, it is essentially free to create the next thing. Huh? Hence Napster and all those worries.
It's free. For good competitive reasons, we give it away. I mean, it's not like, you know, we just love people, so we give away the browser. No, no. Why? Why was that done? Because for competitive reasons. Because of unit cost, because of software. And the unit cost model for a piece of software. How much it costs to create that next one and then distribute it if you have the internet? How much that cost? Arguably, it approaches zero. So the cost of the thing is zero. We must, therefore, give it away. Or our models break down. We must, therefore, give it away in order to build business.
All humanity now has the option to become enduringly successful. This confident assertion was made in 1980 by the late R. Buckminster Fuller, architect, inventor, mathematician, poet, cosmologist, philosopher, and the archetypal engineer. Fuller coined the term ephemeralization for mankind's tendency to continually do more with ever less weight, time, and energy per each given level of functional performance, which would ultimately lead to a sustainable level of effectively great wealth for all of mankind. Ephemeralization. We continually do more with less, and we're getting better at it.
The first times we started to communicate across the Atlantic or across the Pacific, we took cables. We took these big, huge copper cables and strung them under the water. Costing millions and millions of dollars. We can do the same thing today with a satellite. Weighs a quarter a ton instead of tons and tons of copper at a fraction of the cost using a fraction of the energy because of this. Okay. Because we've applied our intelligence to the thing. Ephemeralization. That's what Bucky Fuller called it. We do the same thing with software. That is the essence of software. The very nature of software is to optimize stuff. We find the hot spots in human activity, i.e., those things that gave rise to the whole, and we optimize. Right? So I guess what I'm saying is we fill the hole with software. That's how we fix that. You know, fully 5% of the electricity we consume in this country is for computer systems. They just realized that in California. That's a big number. 5% is a lot. It's a lot. And if they are in the idle loop most of the time, that, again, is a waste of resources. That's what gives rise to the whole. Okay? Not a good idea. How can we use these resources better? And that's what Genie can help to enable, something like Genie. Genie or something like Genie. And let me say that because I want you to understand it doesn't have to be this one thing. As long as some of these principles are employed, and as long as we do things better with respect to resources, it doesn't really matter, does it, in the end? That's really what I care about, is that we do a better job with resources. Right? It may be Genie, it may not be. I'm going to give you some reasons why I think it ought to be, but the market will decide. Now, a bit more on ephemeralization, which is what economists call productivity. Same thing, doing more with less, right? Something happened in 1995, and Alan Greenspan, if you listen to him speak, he's still scratching his head on this one. We don't know if we can sustain this increased rate of productivity increase that we started to see in 1995, because they're not sure what gave rise to it. Okay, and I'm just bold enough to say, I know what gave rise to that. I'll tell you what gave rise to that. There are three things, and it's not what you're thinking, There are three things that year that happened that I believe make a case for what happened in 1995. Three things. Number one, Java was released. Yeah. Programmer productivity went up. And that's, you know, we can prove that. That was number one. Number two, Netscape went public. All of a sudden, all of that activity around, you can make money with this stock. Well, what does the stock do? Well, it's this browser thing. What's a browser? And then number three, that's the year that that one company up in the Pacific Northwest finally deigned to bundle TCP/IP in with the platform. Okay, those three things, I claim, gave rise to what we call, we have taken a step now into the network age.
We are in the midst of the most dramatic cultural shift in 300 years. In her book, After the Clockwork Universe, Sally J. Goiner explains why great change is simmering in all facets of our civilization, from economics and politics to science and spirituality. Our inherited concept of a machine world, the clockwork universe, is rapidly giving way to the vision of a networked world, which is rising to take its place.
Networks are going everywhere. We're in the network age. This is the age of the network. It's no longer the industrial age. It's no longer a clock, right? It's a network bunch of clocks put together. And because we're in that age now, we're going to see the world a little differently. When we first got into this industrial age thing, with thanks to Copernicus and Galileo and some of those guys, and Newton certainly, we started to see the world as a machine. We started to see the human body as a machine. We started to think in those terms, because that was the new thing. I believe we're going to start to see the world now as a network. We'll see the body, and the body is a network. It's a group of autonomous entities working together harmoniously. That's what it is. That's true of a society. It's true of an economy. We're going to see the world this way now. This is also true of the network itself.
Interdependence, which assumes both communication and connection, both of which are basic properties of a network, is now seen as central to understanding organization and change at all levels, from chemical networks and living cells to ecosystems, cities, and economies. Thus, the network as a metaphor is both accurate as a descriptive symbol and accessible as an icon.
Do networks sometimes partially fail? Sure. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with the not-so-obvious attributes of the arbitrary network? And this notion of hardware, software, two different things. What Genie would have us do is treat everything as an extensible Java object. Okay, and that might be very useful in this world that's coming. If George Gilder's on the money, he wrote a book called Telecosm where he talks about that. You know, it's going to be very, very fast. It's going to be silicon on the inside, made of light, made of fiber. And on the outside, this telecosm is made of software, malleable devices, things that can be different things, depending on what the user wants.
I heard just the other day there's a website that's going out that's going to be, it's going to do one of these peer-to-peer things like Napster, but it's not going to be specific to any kind of file format or anything like that. It's just going to be whatever you got, you can swap. If it be CPU, if it be disk, if it be whatever, you know, peer-to-peer can make that happen.
Even as the network metaphor is changing our relationship with each other, cell phone-connected mobile processors have the potential to extend our senses in yet unimagined ways. Stephen Mann of the University of Toronto has been pioneering wearable computers for over 20 years.
Interestingly enough, Stephen Mann was the only man, the only individual in the history of MIT to get 100% on his graduate oral exams when he got his PhD, the only person, because he brought his research with him. Now, talk about competitive advantage, right? He had a distinct competitive advantage over every other person who had ever gone for a PhD at MIT because he was able to connect, because he was able to wear this psychic amplifier and take it everywhere with him. Now, would that add value? If you had that, would that add value? Let me ask that another way. If your competitor had that, where would you be? I think that's a possibility, a distinct possibility. Indeed, we're wearing stuff. According to Dr. Mann, it's inevitable, and he even posited what the architecture for something like that might look like. And now we can actually fill in all of that with things like WAP, things like MIDP. We can talk about those kinds of APIs. I do believe that in 10 years' time, we're going to be out here talking about internet-based telepathy. You know, and the Java APIs for that. I'm just kidding. It's going to probably be more like 5 years' time, okay? So, we're moving real fast here. It happened in 1995. The network age was born. And look what happened with respect to productivity. The small increase in productivity gives rise to a huge increase in output over a period of time, leaving behind in its wake wealth, wealth creation. And I'm not talking dot-com madness here. I'm talking true wealth, productivity, i.e. doing more with less. That's what the network age is all about. And I believe we took that step in 1995. That's why I believe, if there's hope for us, it's right here.